Sahanau Bhavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Do we chant the last two?
Aparokshatma vijnanam
Shabdam deshika purvakam
Shabdam deshika purvakam
Samsara karanajnana
Samsara karanajnana
Tamasashtanda bhaskaraha
Tamasashtanda bhaskaraha
Ittam tattvavivekam vidhaya
Ittam tattvavivekam vidhaya
Vidhivan manasamadhaya
Vidhivan manasamadhaya
Vigalita samsriti bandaha
Vigalita samsriti bandaha
Prapnoti param padam
Prapnoti param padam
Naro nachira
Naro nachira
In the verse 62, he just gave the, what we call the palitam, or the fruit, the avantara-pala, just a secondary pala, secondary fruit for both paroksha and aparoksha. He talked about it, the vakyam for this one, 62, vakyam apratibaddam sat prak paroksha avabhasite kara amalakavat bodham aparoksham pasuyate. Just to reiterate here, the Vakya means the Mahavakya. So the Mahavakya, which is apratibaddha, unimpeded, initially will be as though paroksha. We say as though paroksha here in this context because the teacher and the teaching, the pramana, is being used as a pramana. And the self that's being revealed is yourself. But once all of the pratibandhakas are dismissed that have to do with either the pramana or the prameya or the pramatra. The pramatra means the one who's knowing. What are the qualifications of the knower? Am I qualified? I don't think I'm qualified for this knowledge. So there's this kind of impossibility. How could I be good enough to gain this knowledge? Actually, that's quite a normal pratibandhaka because of all of the kind of notions that are flying around. You know, that means you have to be like walking on the water, or you have to jump off the cliff to get a better upadhi, or you have to be an extremely saintly person, all of these things, but you don't even know what saintly means, to be that saintly of a person. And so, you know, these are all notions. They're all big notions that actually act as a pratibandha. to actually be able to gain knowledge, because how could somebody like me just gain enlightenment? Enlightenment's a huge word, so there's a lot of conditioning, very off-putting conditioning around these type of words that as though take this knowledge very far away from me, when actually it should be very close to me. The only qualification for you is enough mumukshutvam to want to gain this knowledge. That is the qualification. It is not being a brahmana. It's not being a brahmana means the highest caste. It's not being a man. It's being a man or a woman or a young person, as long as they have a workable buddhi, a young person, you know, or from all over the world, not just an Indian person, not just an Indian male brahmana. Absolutely not. This is the first in the Brahma Sutras. The first sutra is Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now, therefore, the desire to know Brahman. And in the introduction to that, who is that adhikari? And Shankara just lays it out. The adhikari is the mumukshu. It has nothing to do with caste. It has nothing to do with gender. It has nothing to do with where you're born. You can be an American, or you can be an Indian, or you can be a European, or you can be born in Japan, or Swahili, or wherever. You can be born anywhere. It doesn't make any difference. What matters is the mumukshutvam, and if that mumukshutvam is there, the promise of the Shastra is that this knowledge will actually come to you wherever you might be. I didn't mean Swahili, I meant Timbuktu. Swamiji's always joking about Timbuktu because it's way out there in the boonies, and actually. So, if you're a mumukshu, you will gain this knowledge. And if you're a mumukshu, you're qualified to gain this knowledge. Just by the mere fact that you're a mumukshu, all of the other qualifications will come. We might not have them, and we don't have them all, this viveka, vairagya, shamadham, etc. All of these we have to some extent, you know. We haven't just, even the mumukshutvam we have to some extent, not all the way, you know, but enough to make me a mumukshu, enough viveka, enough vairagya, enough of these qualities of the mind. We have enough, you know, to make you be willing to sit here and listen. That's a huge, huge thing. But words like enlightenment, you know, and stories of magical figures and stories of yogis with siddhis, you know, these are kind of sometimes all mixed together. Even as I become enlightened, as I gain enlightenment, all of the siddhis come naturally to me. That isn't true. That is simply not true. I don't have any siddhis. What a funny thing to say. I don't want any. Okay. Okay, so these pratibandhikas, either the pramatra, I can't get this knowledge, I'm not good enough to have this knowledge, I'm not pure enough, I don't have the right kind of upadhyaya, on and on. Then in terms of the pramana, how can Brahman, that is not an object within the creation, how can it be known? How is that even possible for me to gain knowledge of that? And if you say that it's here now, how it is here now, and if it's here now, why don't I know it? So there's a lot of questions and doubts that come up around the pramana. All of those things have to be answered. And the pramaya is about Brahman Ishwara itself. All of the doubts around Brahman, around Ishwara, around the jiva, the Brahma jiva aikyam, you know, that I actually, as a jiva, I actually am Brahman, that I actually am Ishwara. If I say the whole knowledge, like we say, the whole knowledge to really understand, you have to be able to say, I am Ishwara, and not be a narcissist. A narcissist would be, I am Ishwara, this person who sits before you. I am Ishwara. Okay. So what if you take the Mahavakya like that? You're going to think, what kind of a teaching is this? And so this has to be very thoroughly understood so that when you say, I am Ishwar, you're talking about who you actually are. The Paramatma, the self that you are, is the very self of Ishwara, and Ishwara has no being apart from your being because it's mithya. All these things have to be clear. But so when the teaching takes place, it starts out, of course, as paroksha, because as real in true sense of the word, because it hasn't done its work yet. But as it does its work and one becomes clear and all of these doubts are removed, there still can be a feeling that I know, but I don't really know. Something's missing. And that's when we have to go into all of these psychological traumas and all of the ashuddhi, the different types of ashuddhi in the antakarana. And we bring in this era, we bring in the unconscious and deal with that. So these things that cause pain in me and cause reactions in me, I've learned how to be with those in such a way that they heal. They heal, maybe not completely, but you know, like an infected wound is going to heal, but there'll be a little scar, but it's still healed. And so we have scars instead of infections. You know, that's a huge difference. That's a huge difference if we have the scars of our trauma. Swamiji will sometimes say those scars healed traumas doesn't mean that you forget your trauma. You don't forget what happened, you know. And also, your antakarana, your psyche, is also shaped by those, by our experiences, the good and bad experiences. So that your personality is also shaped by the good things and the very painful things that have happened. That makes you who you are now. So it's not that these problems disappear as though they were never there. That's not true. And they do leave their scars, and they do leave their sensitivities, you know. But that's what gives you, that's what gives you, what I would say, empathy. Or compassion, or being able to deeply understand somebody else, you know, because you yourself have gone through a lot of things. When Swamiji says, you know, I worked really hard for this knowledge. He worked really hard for this knowledge, and he was probably had a lot of vibhutis. When vibhutis means there's a lot of very special qualities about him, very special. He had always, he even said once, he always since a little boy, he was a very, very compassionate child. But his father also was very compassionate. He was a very giving man, you know. The Swamiji also had tremendous compassion. But he also lost his father when he was 8 years old. He was also punished one day. He was tied up to a stick outside so he wouldn't keep running off. Kind of like a dog. So he was tied up to the stick and people forgot about him. You know, he was there for hours. You know, tied up outside, and he just sat there and sat there and sat there, and then finally somebody remembered about him and went out and got him, you know. And then he lost his father when he was 8 years old, and then when he lost his father, he didn't know how to relate to it, so he just went out and played. You know, he's just playing and having a good time with his friends and playing, and his father has just died. And then all of his family were horrified, and they came and got him, and they were, how can you be playing when your father has just died and all this? So he had his own, there's more stories. He had his own hardships. He had hardships, you know, when he was very young. So he had to deal with everything, you know. And he did. Just like we have to deal with everything, and we do. That's what we do, you know. That's why when Swamiji says I worked really hard for him, he had a lot of other problems too. Even in the gaining of this knowledge was not easy for him. It was very, very, very stressful because his teacher didn't really teach the Vedanta as a pramana or even know that it was a pramana. And so he sometimes jokes and says, I meditated until all my hair fell out. Because he's bald, you know. So I burned it all off, you know, and didn't get any more doing it either. And I mean, in the sense of it delivering the goods, it didn't deliver the goods, you know. I meditated for hours and hours and hours, and went and saw Ramana's disciple, and Ramana had just died. He just missed Ramana, just like by a few days or something. Went and talked to him. And he said, "Well, how can I find Shanti?" He said, I try so hard and doing all these things. And he said, the Ramana's disciple said, "But that's the problem. No, don't do anything. If you don't do anything, you'll be fine. Yeah? Because yourself doesn't do anything." So there's all these things. There's all these challenges, the challenges of life, you know, and all of our things we have to overcome, and we have to grow, and all of these things. And you don't have much choice either. You can't say, "Well, I'm just not going to grow anymore." You know, I've had it with that. Yeah. But you know what? You can say that when you're happy. You don't even think about growing when you're happy. You think about growing when you're not happy. And that's why there's not much you can do about it, because you're not going to sit there and be unhappy and think, "Okay, well, this is good enough. It's good enough. I'm really miserable, but, you know, it's all right." Nobody feels that way. Nobody feels that it's all right to be miserable, you know, or to be hurt, or to have that kind of constriction in your chest. Nobody feels that that's okay. You know, these things have to be worked on. I have to free myself from these things, you know, so that the experience of my body and mind reflects myself. So that's in it, that it reflects myself. At least to the degree that whatever my mind is thinking, whatever my emotions are doing, whatever, however my body is reacting or whatever, I can honestly say, it's fine. It's fine. You can be with me. You know, I don't expect you to be perfect all of the time. I don't need that. I don't need for you to be happy all the time. I don't need that at all. You know, but I also don't want to be overwhelmed with pulsating sorrow and stress. I don't want that at all. And so those things that you don't want at all, those are sadhanas. Those are your sadhanas. And you can't really say, nobody can say, "Oh, it's okay with me to be pulsating pain, you know, and agony, be in agony." Nobody thinks that's okay, whether you're a mumukshu or not. And so there's a natural growth process that we all go through. And so we actually, especially now as mumukshus, this is kind of what we're doing. This is kind of what your life is about, you know, is to, for your heart to be as big as Ishwara. That's what it amounts to. And that's not in light of your knowledge, as you learn, own up your knowledge, and that vairagya keeps maturing. That's not some far off walking on water vision. It actually just means that nothing in the world has that, or in your mind has that power over you to constrict your heart. You know? There's no constriction in your heart. And that's because of your knowledge, because you're not asking the world to make you happy. You're not asking a person to make you happy. We're usually asking somebody to make us happy, or blaming somebody for making us unhappy. That's kind of normal. We're not proud of that, but those are sadhanas. Those are the things we have to work on, because we don't want to be like that. I'd love to just be with the people that I'm with and be so happy to be with them, and, you know, have my heart be as big as Ishwara and just be a blessing to the world. Actually, people who have knowledge are a blessing to the world, because they're not creating problems. They like you as you are. That's just the biggest, most wonderful contribution to the world. Just think of yourself personally. You know, if somebody comes into your life and they really like you, and they just like you exactly as you are. That's such a nice thing. There's so much freedom in that. You can just totally relax. So jnanis are like a breath of fresh air, you know, because I have somebody around that likes me as I am. So that's a beautiful thing. So this transition from really understanding to from that paroksha, it's like a paroksha aparoksha. From really you really understand but it doesn't feel right, to where it's actually everything is very clear, kind of like that amalaka in your hand. Very, very clear, beautiful. That's the aparoksha. So for in that, when that aparoksha, that means that no matter what is going on, nothing covers my ananda, my being. That's aparoksha jnana. Okay. So then he gives this the pala for both paroksha and aparoksha, because the paroksha also, you know, even though it hasn't fully fructified, it still does good things for you. And so what he said in this verse 63 is that this shabdam, the shabdam is the pramana. It's the Vedas being wielded by the guru, this deshika purvakam, shabdam deshika purvakam. It means the shabda, the shabda pramana, the mahavakya that's being unfolded through the wielding of the teacher, the deshika. That shabdam, which is really the wielding of the Mahavakya, gives the direct immediate knowledge of Brahman, which is initially paroksham. Means it takes a while to get it completely. And so he says, what good is that in terms of any kind of pala? Say if you only have the paroksha, how is that benefiting me? Just to have the paroksha, jnana. So he says, you know, it burns out all of the papas, the paroksha jnanam, that knowledge burns out all of the papas that you've accrued up until this point. And the idea behind that is this, as we continue to do the shravana manana nididhyasana, these papa karmas are acting as impediments, as pratibandhakas. You know, because they're traumas and hurts inside, or also, like, what if you were raised in a criminal family, crime family, you know. They're very rough, you know, very violent. They treat their children very violently. Actually, it's like a kind of a mafia family, crime syndicate family. Sometimes they treat their children very rough. They're also very crude, and they are hard on each other. Child is abused, you know. Then that's karma. You were born into it, you know. You were born into that, and you have some scars from that, and you're also a mamoksha. So you had to get rid of this little thing. Before you met your teacher, you had to get rid of this type of painful karma. And you also have to then heal the scars and even heal, for some people, the value systems that you picked up from your parents, which can be very a dharmic value system, you know. So that's a lot of work, that stuff that has to be overcome. So what this says is, as you become a mumukshu, and now this teaching is taking place, shravana manana nididhyasana, all of these adharmas and all of the complexes inside get burned out. They get burned like fire. They burn they're burned out as though by fire. So that's the pala of the paroksha jnanam. And so now in this one, what's the pala of the aparoksha jnanam? So it says, aparoksha, just repeat after me. Do we already do that? We can do it again if we do it. Okay. Aparoksha. Atma vijnanam.
Atma vijnanam.
Shabdam.
Shabdam.
Deshika.
Deshika.
Purvakam.
Purvakam.
Samsara.
Samsara.
Karana.
Karana.
Ajnana.
Ajnana.
Tamasaha.
Tamasaha.
Chanda.
Chanda.
Bhaskaraha.
Bhaskaraha.
So what then is the fruit, the pola, of aparoksha jnanam? And so what he says is that this aparoksha atma vijnanam, this atma, remember vijnanam means that really the direct, immediate experience, and the sakshat. Sakshat means sakshatkara. Like Sakshat Kritananda means his ananda, his that one Swami that I have so much respect for. Sakshat Kritananda, his ananda, his atmajnanam, right, has been made sakshat. Sakshat means it's right here. It's right in front of you. There's no distance between you and your knowledge. That's sakshat. So here when you say aparoksha atma vijnanam, the nature of yourself, which itself is aparoksha. Aparoksha, it means it's self-evident, right? And you have knowledge of that self-evident self, and that knowledge is vijnanam. It's not jnanam, it's vijnanam. It means it's a knowledge which causes the aparoksha atma to be aparoksha atma for you, to be direct, immediately recognized through what shabdam deshika purvakam, really through the mahavakya, the shabda, which is the shabda pramana, that comes from the shabda, from the words of the mahavakya, as handled by the teacher, the deshika. So that gives this aparoksha atma vijnanam. And what do you get from that? Samsara, karana, ajnana, tamasaha, chanda, bhaskaraha. Chanda, bhaskaraha. Bhaskara is the sun. Chanda is it's like a very fierce sun. And so in the commentary, what he says about this is the sun that's shining at midday. So the sun, imagine the sun right above you and shining in every direction. So everything is completely illumined and it is fierce. Chanda means it is fiercely hot. Okay. So it says this aparoksha jnanam as taught directly by the teacher is like the chanda bhaskara. It's like this, the bright, fierce sun right up in the middle of the heavens, it is like this fierce sun, like the fierce sun is for the darkness, as fierce sun, as the fierce, what does the fierce sun do to the tamas? So as the fierce sun is for the tamas, for the darkness of ajnana, which is the cause for samsara. So this is a beautiful compound. Samsara, karana. Karana means cause. So samsara, karana. And then ajnana, the ignorance. And then tamasaha, of the darkness. Of the darkness of ignorance, which is the cause of samsara. So this aparoksha atma vijnanam is the fiercely hot midday sun. It's just as the fiercely hot midday sun would be for the darkness. Right? So it is that for the darkness of ajnanam. The atma vijnanam, aparoksha jnanam, is the sun of the darkness of ajnanam, which causes all of this samsara. Okay. So that's the aparoksha jnanam. What does he say for this? This is how he defines this vijnanam in the commentary. I like this. Samshaya viparyaya rahitam. So, yet jnanam, that knowledge which is free of some, rahitam always at the end of a compound, it means free of. So that which is free of samshaya, doubt, and viparyaya, misapprehension. So no longer do I have any doubts, nor do I superimpose myself upon the world in any way. So that is the vijnanam. So tat samsara karana ajnana tamasaha samsara karanam tat ajnanam asti tadeva tamasaha tasya chanda chanda bhaskaraha. Okay, so that's the pula of aparoksha jnanam, is the absolute freedom from samsara. So now, another thing. The freedom from samsara does not mean that we don't experience the world. It doesn't mean that we don't have a mind, or that we don't have a buddhi, or that we don't have emotions, or that we don't have preferences. That's an important thing. Sometimes in some, kind of the more new agey spirits, some spiritual disciplines, sometimes as spiritual seekers of certain disciplines, they're called walking heads. Because anything, you know, from the body on down, you know, no feelings, no emotions, no physical anything, you know, no anything. just a walking head. So people make fun of the walking heads, you know. And who wants to be a walking head? Honestly, who wants to be a walking head? You know? I don't. You know? But I also don't want to be in pain. You know? I want to be able to be fully present to the world, you know, and enjoy and be with people, you know. I don't want to have to hide, or I don't want to have to be afraid of kind of the salt and pepper that life is throwing at you all of the time. And why should we be afraid if yourself is never touched in any way? You know, we are afraid of the universe. We would be afraid of the universe when we think something can happen to us, but actually nothing can happen to you. That's like if you're having a lucid dream and you know what the dream is. You know what it is. You know what its content is. I mean, you know what its substance is. You know, and all kinds of things can be happening in that dream, but you know it's a dream, you know. And you know who you are. You know both. You know who you are, and you know what the dream is. And so nothing is really happening. And so as you kind of adjust to that reality, you know, you can participate much more freely, much more beautifully in life, and not be too afraid, you know. So there's a tremendous amount of freedom in that. Is also give up the idea that people, it's the responsibility of others to make you happy. You know, that doesn't work. It doesn't work, you know. That's a big responsibility to put on people. Not that people don't want to make, not that we don't want to make each other happy, it's not that. But what if that's their duty? Your duty is to make me happy. You know? That's too big of a weight to carry. Nobody can carry it. And besides, you're changing all the time about what would make you happy. That becomes all very, very confusing, you know? So Swamiji used to kind of joke and say, you know, I would be the best partner. Nobody would be a better partner than me. Because I don't need you to make me happy. You can just be as you are, and that is fine. I can just love you exactly as you are. You have complete freedom to be yourself. It's okay. You know? So that I would be the best father. He actually says these things. But there's also some truth in it, you know? Because I can completely love you and help you to grow up in the best way that's best way for you. You know? Oh, I thought that was mine. You know, so that's all very, very beautiful. There's so much freedom in that, you know. And so not to be burdened by this ajnanam, but part of it, just like we're talking right now, is to really understand what that means, because that's part of the teaching also, because we come to this teaching with all kinds of notions, you know, about what it is to be a spiritual person or what it is to have vairagya. Vairagya doesn't mean that, like Swamiji would sometimes go, like, this is vairagya, everything, stick, keep away from me, you know. That's not vairagya. Vairagya is you can come and you can go. And it's fine. I can be fully with you when you're here because I'm not afraid of your going. That's vairagya, you know. The example we often use for vairagya, and in some, there's one text, I forget the name, Dindima, I think. Go down to Dindima. The very end, vairagya is jnanam. Atma jnanam is vairagya. Because vairagya actually matures, can only mature, really, to really be pure vairagya, you can only have that with jnanam. Because pure vairagya means that I can be fully present to my life and to the world and to the people that I love and be fully able to let them come and go, you know, and still be whole. So that gives a tremendous amount of freedom. It's not about wanting you to go. It's not about that at all. Or wanting you to come. It's about being happy that you're here. And when it's time to go, you can go, because that's our karma, you know. There's nobody hanging on, oh, don't leave me. If you leave me, I'm not going to be whole or complete. So that allows, even in terms of your temper, you know, your temper tantrums and whatnot that we have from time to time, or temper tantrums. What if it's okay? What if from your standpoint of your partner, okay, you're having a little temper tantrum now. It's okay. You know, it's a cloudy day. It's just a cloudy day. But I know who you are. So the vairagya is something really wonderful. It allows you so much freedom, you know, because you can follow your desires, which we all have desires. I mean, the Mahatma Gnani has desires. It's called swecha. It's part of the, it's coming out of yourself. It's your own prarabdha. You can have the desires, you can act on the desires, and when it doesn't work out, that's fine. You might decide to try it again. Or you said, okay, that's not going to work. It's all right. There's no ananda at stake. So this type of maturity gives so much freedom to live. Yeah. And we have to grow into that maturity, because where you start from is where you don't really have that much freedom to live. You have to know yourself to have that freedom. And then there's this emotional lag time where all of the constrictions that we've gathered in this life and prior lives, you know, have to rise up into the light of your knowledge. And then that's what allows them to be released. They come from the unconscious into the light of your knowledge, and then now they're dealing with a new person that has a new attitude toward those kind of desires and those kind of needs, and then they can fall off. They just keep rising up out of the unconscious into you, into your knowledge, and then they are transformed, because you don't have the same attitude to those habitual types of desires, so they transform and change. So now in this last verse, how the commentator introduces this last verse, he says, Grantha abhyasa polam aha. Now he tells the pola, the fruit of grantha abhyasa, the repeated study of this text. It means here, as it's taken in the comment, your repeated study of this chapter one, you should be studied over and over and over again. And what is the pala of that? Studied over and over and over again until you understand it. Because here, Vidyaranya feels he's gone through really all of the prakriyas. He's given what you need to know. Now it just has to be studied and understood, recognized. And so here he says, repeat after me. Ittam tatva vivekam vidaya
vidivat
manaha samadaya galita samsriti bandaha prapnoti parampadam naraha nachirat. So he says, in this manner, what he means is, in the manner that it has been just told, in the manner that has been unfolded in this text, he says, tatva vivekam vidaya, having done the tatva viveka. The tatva viveka can be summed up in drikdrisha viveka, see or seeing differentiation, the panchakosha viveka, the differentiating of yourself from the five koshas, the avastatraya sakshi, that's another prakriya that we've used, where you recognize, you differentiate your being, the atma, yourself, from the waking dream and deep sleep. That's a very powerful prakriya. So these are the different methods that he's used, even seeing the three shariras, you know, the karana sharira, the sukshma sharira, the stula sharira, and seeing the pancha koshas within that, and then using also the three states of experience, all as devices to help you differentiate the totality of your objectifiable experience. That's what's so kind of beautiful about the really kind of learning and being able to play with the creation story that they give. The story of the creation itself, from Ishwara to Hiranyagarbha to Virat, the story of the creation of the jiva, you know, from Prajna to prajna to Taijasa, to Vishwa. This whole story is so nice to have in total, because it gives to Maya every part of yourself, including the conscious mind and sense organs. So the conscious mind and sense organs, along with the physical body, along with all different forms of knowership, you know, and all different forms of feeling, being a feeler, being somebody who knows, being somebody who sees, somebody who hears, all of these knower, known, subject-object relationships that exist within the creation, all of that is included in the story of the manifestation of this creation. And so the whole thing, the whole creation, including your body, mind, sense organs, and the five elements, including space, all of it is differentiated from you. That's why the major, we talked a little bit about this when it came up, a major viveka, the Drik Drisha viveka, that has one additional step in it. That Drik Drisha, that seer seeing differentiation, differentiating from ultimately me, the conscious being. We go from what I experience out here through my sense organs. Then we realize that the five sense organs themselves are responsible for experiencing this body. So this body becomes a drisha, an object of my perception. Then I realize, well, it's the sense organs that are the one, are really the self, you know, the consciousness that it's, they're the tools. The sense organs are the tools for knowing this body. But then I see, going more inward, that the sense organs are also known. We say they're known by the manas. You know, the manas or even the buddhi, the mind, the antakarana, uses the sense organs in order to form a vritti, so that a vritti can, they use the sense organs, and then any knowledge that comes through those sense organs are then known by the manas, which is then commented on by the buddhi, right? And so here we go more inward, but then when we get to the buddhi, what do? Instead of what they could just resolve it into the self, into the atma, because really the conscious being that illumines the buddhi is innermost. But no, they take the buddhi, they resolve the buddhi into Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha is like the infinite mind. It's Ishwara's infinite mind. It's pure sattva. The buddhi, the manas, is sattva. But when you resolve the buddhi into Hiranyagarbha, means that you're recognizing that the buddhi itself is part and parcel. It belongs to Hiranyagarbha. It's like a cell in the body, you know? And so if you resolve the buddhi, realizing that it's part and parcel of the total infinite mind of Ishvara, then now you, when you're resolving the buddhi, which is now resolved into Ishvara, into the self, then you are Ishvara. You are the self of Ishvara. Right? Because when we say Hiranyagarbha, that's just Ishvara that is now manifest as the total subtle body. And then going through Panchikarana, it becomes the physical body. So what I'm saying is, even though it's a little cumbersome to get all of this in your mind so that you can play with it, it's worth it. It's worth it to do that. It's worth it to do almost like an upasana, to contemplate on it so that you can realize that all of this, this whole world filled with rajas, there's so much going on here, this whole thing, you know, has me, this very personal me, for its adhishtana, not just this body. This body goes into virat, actually, we can do that too. I am the adhishtana of this whole thing. And we have to use these prakriyas in a lot of different ways, just in your own, the teacher uses them all the time. But also in your own, when doing nididhyasana, or in your own, you know, shravana, when you're studying, to really be with these things and think through it, to actually work with them and see them is wonderful. So what he says here is, having done this tattva viveka in all the ways, ittam, in the ways, all the ways now that have been taught. So having done that, and then vidhivat manaha samadhaya, then bringing the mind into samadhi, into absorption, Vidyavat, according to Vidhi, means that in the ways that I've taught you, he says in that commentary. What he says is, this is important for him because he's brought it up before. He says, resolving the manas, right? Resolving the manas by the means which have been told by the Shastra. He doesn't want you to get stuck in the potentially yoga sutras. He wants you to know that what potentially has given as a rishi, which he praises praises as being something that's fantastic or some wonderful word like that. He used these extraordinary, yoga sutras, the Ashtanga Yoga. But this Ashtanga Yoga, everything that is in there comes from the Vedas. And he wants that to be known. So that the potentially yoga sutras that we use don't really belong to potentially. Potentially collected these things and put them together in a very brilliant, beautiful way. So they belong to the Vedas. And so doing as has been direct, as we have directed you, doing that, bringing that mind in the samadhi, then what? The one who has done this, the one who has done the viveka, the one who has resolved the mind in samadhi by vidhi, as has been instructed. Vidhi is another important word. Following vidhi, according to vidhi. Vidhi is the word that we use in the Upanishads, and especially in the first part of the Vedas. Vidhi is the instruction of the Vedas. So then he says, so having done all these, then what? Vigalita samsriti bandha. For the one, then this becomes a title of somebody. The one for whom the bondage of samsara, samsriti bandha, the bondage of samsara, vigalita, is gone, has dropped off. So for that person, for whom this bondage of samsara has dropped off, having done this tattva viveka, as you've been taught, having practiced the samadhi nididhyasana, according to the vidhis, as we've gone step by step through the samadhi, through the dharana, then the dhyanam, and the samadhi comes from the dhyanam, and then that moves into nididhyasana, understanding how to do that. Then the one for whom the bondage of samsara has dropped off, prapnoti, he attains, naraha, that person, prapnoti, gains parampadam, that supreme padam, that supreme satchidananda atma, which is Brahman. He gains that natchirat, not after a long time, right away gains that. Right away gains that. Why? Because you are that. You are that. It's not like it takes a long time to gain yourself. Right? Yourself is already here. So in a sense, there is no gain. It's a gain of the gained. So not after a long time. Then there's one other way to say that. That natchirat. As long as you have this body, it's called, you become a jivan mukta. You're liberated while living. Right? So that's jivan mukta. Liberated while living. But after some time, the body drops off, the prarabdha karmas are gone, this body drops off, and then you become what's called a videha mukti. You are liberated, a videha mukta. You're liberated having dropped the body. And then what does that mean? Who are you? Then, when this body is dropped, you are Ishwara. This body, mind, sense, organs is just resolved into Ishwara, you are Ishwara. It's a way of saying you are Brahman with Maya. Because Maya belongs to Brahman. Right? It doesn't lose its mithyatva, but that mithyatva, the Maya, which is mithya, doesn't have anywhere else to be other than in Brahman. Because the time, space, the five elements and time, space, and everything belong to Maya. And so you can't say that Maya is in space, some space somewhere. There is no space. The space has to come from Maya. Right. And so then where to put Maya? Only in Brahman. Because that's the only thing that's there. Brahman is non-dual, right? There's no, non-dual means there is no other thing. So the Maya is, as Swamiji calls it, an incidental attribute of Brahman. Its incidental attribute means it's mithya. Incidental means as it's an attribute in the sense that it belongs to Brahman, but it doesn't bring about any change to Brahman in any way. So, He says the person, this person, who has done this tattva viveka, having studied the text over and over and over, gabhyasa, until you don't need to study it anymore, making it yours, and then practicing nididhyasana as we've taught you, says then that person, having done these things, becomes one for whom the bondage of samsara is vigalita. It is gone. It is dropped off. And such a person, that person, gains the param padam. Param padam is Brahman, the Satchidananda, the Atman Brahman. Quickly, Natchirat. Om Tat Sat.
Om Tat Sat.
Do a little project.